Hello and welcome to the Fortune and Freedom podcast, where Nigel Farage and Nikolai Hubble give you a unique take on what's really going on in the world of finance, investing, and politics. We hope you sit back and enjoy this episode. What does the early UK election mean for investors? Who better to ask than Nigel Farage? Nigel, we've passed back and forth some talking points for this video, but what I don't know is which one of them you consider to be the most important one for our question of what the UK election means for investors. So I'll leave it to you with an open floor. Which one of those talking points do you think is most important?
I think pensions are the most important. If you remember back 25 years ago, but the one thing Labour did as soon as it got into power was to attack the private pension sector with taxes on dividends, which of course hit reinvestment, hit compounded growth. There are all sorts of dark rumours as to what they might do with pensions. Jeremy Hunt did lift the limits on what people could put into pensions. This was done partly because a lot of mid-50-year-old doctors were just leaving the NHS because their pension pots were full. I expect that's going to be cracked down upon. I think pension pot limits will be reduced. Whether there are more taxes, it's difficult to say. But I do think pensions are perhaps the biggest short-term worry. I mean, on the face of it, Labour's economic plans are identical to the Conservatives. Literally identical. All their projections for deficits, you know, I mean, they're all exactly the same. This will all depend on what kind of Labour government we get. I look at Rachel Reeves. It doesn't exactly inspire much confidence in me, I have to say. But a lot will do. I mean, let's assume that Labour win. And I'm sure they will win. I think the worry would be that if Starmer had a majority of less than 50, the hard left, who genuinely think money grows on trees and believe in modern monetary theory and all of this baloney, would have Starmer chucking money, you know, left, right and centre at absolutely everything. So oddly, a slightly bigger Labour majority we'll see more stability. And that's what Starmer's promising. He's promising stability, by which he means no change at all. Now, you know, the history of Labour governments is they're spendthrift, but then you could argue this Conservative one has been pretty much the same. What I don't anticipate is a Liz Truss-style crisis. I just don't see that happening. I mean, with her, the Bank of England, the IMF, everybody was against her free market, low tax agenda. And of course, viciously, the Bank of England sold gilts the day before her budget. I mean, it was one of the most overt political acts from a so-called independent Bank of England that you've ever seen. I think if there were questions about British debt, if there were questions about British borrowing, I think you'd find the Bank of England being a lot more helpful to Labour than they were to Liz Truss.
There's a story going around at the moment in financial circles that what we have now is a sense of fiscal capture, of fiscal dominance. The idea being that central banks cannot raise interest rates without sending governments bust. And therefore, the government has effectively captured the central bank. They've captured the Bank of England in this impossible position. And that's part of what can go wrong here. Does this mean that the Labour government can spend wildly, almost like Biden in the US, and government spending and debt and deficit is going to get out of control like it did over there? Or are you believing what Labour is saying, that they're going to be quite conservative?
Well, what Labour have said is that the OBR will be the judge, jury and executioner, that they'll give even more power to this sort of bizarre organisation set up by George Osborne. If you take Starmer at his word, and even though I just listened to him on the Today programme, after 15 minutes, I just had to go make a cup of tea. I mean, I couldn't remember a single thing that he'd said. He might be dull, but he's not reckless. You know, he's not reckless. So you have to assume, I generally am assuming that in terms of economics, and I'm talking about, you know, our problems with deficits, our problems with low growth, our problems with a disturbing lack of entrepreneurship, I'm actually assuming very little changes. And in the light of that, you know, if we are going to have stock markets going up around the world, maybe the FTSE still looks cheap. You know, I mean, I'm not taking the sort of, you know, Apocalypse Now style Daily Mail, why you must vote for Rishi thing. I think they're going to be, as I say, unless it's a small majority, I think they're going to be pretty constrained in terms of what they do.
Yeah, that's emphasize that caveat then, that if it is a small majority and the hard left wingers do have some power and some sway, it could change things. Are the Labour government going to trigger some sort of housing construction boom, given that seems to be one of the main issues that they could actually make some headway on over the course of their government?
Well, they're promising to build houses. The Conservatives have failed totally. And, of course, with the immigration figures, we had the immigration figures this week, 1.2 million people again settled in the UK, net 685,000. But that's before the revisions. Last year's figures were 606,000. Until the revisions put them up to 745. So, you know, we need to build a new dwelling every 2 minutes just to cope with immigration, let alone the shortfall that exists in the market already. I suspect that Labour will build a few more houses than Tories. I think you'll see quite a lot of changes to planning rules. I think you'll see a bit more central government overpower, you know, on top of what local councils can do. So, yeah, they will build a few more houses, but will they be able to build the numbers that we need? I very, very much doubt it. And I don't see any sign of net migration changing. Both parties seem to be completely in hock to big business, which wants as much cheap labour as possible, which has been part of our productivity problem. So, yeah, they'll build a few more houses, but I doubt they'll get, you know, over 300,000. I very much doubt it.
One of the ways we've paid the price for Labour governments in the past is a crashing value in the pound. Are you expecting something similar to occur this time round, especially given they seem to have captured the Bank of England into supporting whatever spending they do come up with?
Well, again, you would think that Labour government would mean a bit of a run on the pound, but I'm not sure it will. The pound's at a pretty low level already. I just don't think the fundamentals change. I just don't think they do. And I think the truth is, on economics, on immigration, on a whole raft of things, the parties are remarkably similar. The one difference is that Labour are promising all sorts of union laws, Labour laws, which would make, you know, and it's going to take 2 or 3 years to get this stuff through, remember, but it would make the British economy even less competitive than it is now. Prospects of tax cuts hovering at around about zero, I would have thought. There'll be more fiscal creep. Pensions may be under threat. But on the, you know, if one goes back to fundamental choices at general elections between entirely different philosophies, it does not exist here. These are both, whatever they tell the electorate, however much they pretend in the next 6 weeks to be different, the truth is they are remarkably similar. So I think that the UK will continue to do okay relative to Europe, very poorly compared to America, but certainly, in my view, underfulfilling the potential that Brexit gives it.
It sounds like the key question for investors is the size of the majority that Labour is going to end up with. What is the sort of cutoff point at which point you become worried about whether the Labour hard left hardliners might actually start to have some sort of influence on policy?
Well, obviously, we don't know a lot of the new Labour MPs that are coming in. But I think, you know, Starmer's achievement is that he has changed the Labour Party. We can't deny that. You know, Corbyn's out. He won't even be standing as an official Labour candidate. You know, he has launched, as Kinnock did before and Blair did before. You know, when Starmer says it's a changed Labour Party, actually it is. You know, that's the one thing you have to give him credit for. It is. Although, of course, he's got the other problem now of Islamist Greens and Galloways and people like this in the inner cities. But that's not enough this time round to damage them, because the seats in which there'll be a big pro-Gaza vote are seats that Labour have a 25,000 majority in anyway. By 29, that could be a real issue. So we don't know. But I think we have to assume that the new candidates who've been put on the approved list are not the Corbynistas, because that would be consistent. So I would think, you know, how big's the awkward squad going to be? A couple of dozen? Probably a couple of dozen. Hence, a couple of dozen going the other way means anything under 50, I think, would be the real warning bell. But maybe the polls narrow as election day approaches. I don't know. They probably will a little bit. But I still think we're looking at a stonking Labour majority. I just think the Conservative brand is absolutely bust. I think Rishi is appalling at delivering messages. And just to stand out in the rain in Downing Street, reading off a piece of paper with no passion, with no vim, with no vigour. I mean, that image of him in the rain, I mean, it won't just be Private Eye's front cover next week. We'll be laughing at it in 20 years' time. Amateurish, unlikely to really turn things around. So, yeah, I still think stonking Labour majority.
Do we lack a Labour Party or do we lack a Conservative Party or both?
Both. It's the Uniparty. Two forms of big state, high tax, open border, social democracy. That is what we've got. And that's why so many of these election debates, frankly, are farcical. The differences are really, really marginal.
You told me before we hit the record button that you can see the coast of France. I hope you're not considering doing a runner.
No, I'm not at all. But I am going to spend a bit of time in America in the latter half of this year, because important though our general election is, I think the American election in terms of global security, as we face perhaps the worst crisis in the world since the Cuban Missile Crisis of over 60 years ago, says to me the world was a better, safer place with Donald Trump. And my intention is to spend a bit of time in, you know, I'll campaign in this election, but in the general here. But, you know, if I can help motivate some grassroots conservatives in America to get out and help Trump win, I reckon that's the best thing I can do.
And if viewers are interested in hearing what Nigel has to say about the US election, consider our video from last week, which I'll put the link to below. Nigel, thanks very much for coming on. And to everyone at home, thanks for watching.